Gravity felt a moment of proud glee. The commander looked ragged, as if he hadn't slept.
Your Majesty, the men were stationed throughout the kingdom, in trees, at the edges of the water, anywhere we could think. The beast attacked from behind along the east inlet, one of the places that's never been spotted before. My men say the beast felled 10 men within minutes. Their weapons were useless. They see it has tough skin, thick tusks, and sharp claws. It roared loud enough to pierce their eardrums, and the few surviving soldiers ran.
The commander sounded ashamed to admit this as the king grimaced. His soldiers ran. For some reason, this shocked Arity more than any other fact. Grown, trained men had run because the beast was that frightening. The room seemed to grow colder.
Your Majesty, began Lord Preston Wavecrest. Perhaps we should round up a few lash to try and kill it with their powers.
The king adamantly shook his head, and her uncle hurried on.
With all due respect, now's not the time to have a bleeding heart. A lashed one could kill the beast with a single touch.
Arity's father slammed a fist against his oak desk, making it rattle.
I will not force civilians to face the beast against their will, lashed or not. Would you have women, children, and elderly out there when our own soldiers run from it? There are men on the lashed records. Not many, but I said no.
Lord Preston gritted his teeth. Arity could see the desperation on her uncle's face. He'd already lost his future son-in-law, and his daughter had withdrawn to a dark place in her mind, gone from them as well.
Lord Preston, the king's advisor said, from what I know of the lashed, they must be able to lay hands on a living being and concentrate. Our men are being flung 10 feet from the beast with barely a shrug of its arms. If we could somehow trap it and hold it down, a lashed one would be valuable, but we have not yet discovered a way to do so.
Lord Preston gave a nod and looked away in defeat. Lady Ashley took his hand.
Tonight, the soldiers go again, the king said. Any who are willing. I will offer a healthy financial reward to the one who kills the beast, or injures it enough to take it captive.
From that day on, Arity was allowed into the adult conversations without question. She desperately wanted to drag her grieving cousin along with her, since they'd always done everything together. But the last thing Wyneth needed was to hear talk of the beast. Arity rushed straight to her father's office for news the next morning, but it was empty. The castle was strangely silent. Arity neared High Hall, where a guard stood at attention outside the doors. He allowed her to pass without hesitation. She saw movement through the crack of the door, and she opened it enough to peek in at the mostly empty room. Arity held her breath at the sight of her mother climbing the hanging silks. She hadn't seen her mother perform, even casually, in years. Arity recalled how weightless her mother had always seemed in her silk acts. But today there was heaviness about her ascent. Queen Lelaine's cabernet-coloured curls were pulled up tightly, and she wore a close-fitting tunic and leggings. She was halfway to the ceiling when she stopped, resting her cheek against the fabric as she swayed. The sight filled Arity with sadness. What was going on in her strong mother's mind? Was all hope lost? She refused to believe it. Queen Lelaine seemed to come back to herself. She reclined into a lean and pulled her knees up, repositioning her feet with a glide of the cloth. Her body wound and slid into position with the silks around her waist. Arity recognized the position of a drop roll. Her mother began to soar downward, and the princess quickly saw that her mother was not stopping the roll soon enough. Queen Lelaine reached up wildly to grab at the silks, but tumbled to the ground with a thump.
Mama!
Arity ran into the hall, the guard at her heels, and fell to her mother's side. The queen sat up, pressing a hand against her hip.
Your Highness!
The guard crouched beside her.
I'm fine, she whispered, closing her eyes.
Shall I fetch Mrs. Rathbrook? He asked.
No, it's only bruising. You may leave us.
He hesitated before standing.
I'll be just outside the door if you need anything, Your Highness.
The queen reached for Arity's hand and they clasped, moving closer. Arity helped her sit up.
Are you certain you're okay?
I've had worse falls.
The queen managed a small smile, which quickly faltered as she met her daughter's eyes. The woman's chin trembled.
What is it, Mama? What happened last night?
Your father.
She sniffed and composed herself.
He's at his wit's end, love. The men refused to hunt last night, hundreds of them, even after your father offered a larger reward. We cannot stretch the kingdom's finances further. They're asking for higher-powered weapons, more versatile versions of the cannons they use at sea. But it could take months, years to develop and produce something like that.
Sea's alive, Arity whispered.
Her mother's eyes cleared as she looked at her.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't put this burden on your shoulders. No.
Arity's voice was resolute. I need to know what is going on. The kingdom's burdens are mine as well as yours. The queen's eyes watered.
This beast, it's too strong, too vicious. The men say their war cries only taunt it. My girl, I'm frightened for what's to come.
Arity shivered and pulled her mother against her. She needed her mother to stay strong, for all of them. She'd never seen her like this.
Everything will be all right, Mama. Father will figure something out.
She hoped if she kept saying it, it would become truth. Arity held hands with her mother as news was issued in the king's office.
Three fishermen were reported missing. Traces of their remains were found at daybreak at the sea's edge. They were...
The advisor swallowed hard.
Their bodies were spread over a vast area, as if the beast had dragged them about.
Nausea filled Arity. Lady Ashley clung to her husband's elbow and leaned her face against his arm.
It has to stop, she whispered.
Arity agreed. The tales were unbearable. Everything around her felt fragile. The king leaned his knuckles against his desk, his eyes shut tightly.
Your Majesty.
One of his commanders stepped forward.
The number of men willing to enter the forest to fight the beast has dwindled to nearly nothing. Wives of soldiers are lined at the castle walls during daylight hours, begging for mercy for their husbands, pleading for them not to be forced into the woods.
The man sounded desperate, almost frantic.
The kingdom is petrified with fear. Businesses are shutting down because some fear leaving their homes, even during the day. Some have taken the opportunity to loot. Many are fleeing to the cold lands of Ascomani or the mountains of Teresta. Enough, the king said in a growl. Everyone leave me. I need to think.
He pushed up and went to the window-lined wall, staring out as the others filed away in silence. Arity's mother squeezed her hand before taking her leave. When the room cleared, Princess Arity walked to her father's side and placed a hand on his shoulder.
Father.
He continued to stare out the window, his anxiety obvious. Without looking at her, he reached up and gave her hand a single pat.
While I've been busy, you've grown into a young woman. You call me father now, not papa.
Arity's heart softened. How long had it been since they'd spoken one-on-one?
I thought I was prepared for anything. I prided myself on defending this kingdom against rebels and uprisings and foreign invasion. To be bested by a single creature, to see my people in despair.
Her grip tightened on his shoulder.
You've not been bested. There is hope. You're doing all you can, father.
Am I?
He looked at her now, his watery eyes scanning her face. He ran a hand through his hair, overgrown strands of light red. He was a man in his prime, and Arity didn't like seeing his strength frayed.
I don't like being pushed to desperate measures, he whispered,
almost to himself. Arity swallowed back her emotions enough to speak.
Any who know you do not doubt that you act out of love for the kingdom, always. Do what you must.
He stared back out the window until Arity's hand fell away from him.
Please forgive me, he whispered.
Princess Arity left her father to think, having no idea how her own words would come to affect her. Chapter 5 The castle windows remained tightly locked, denying the rooms and halls of their usual scented breeze, stifling the royal living spaces. That evening, when Vixie and Donovan feigned nightmares, Arity let them cram into her bed.
It left Arity tired in the morning after being kicked and nudged and snored at all night. But she was glad to be able to comfort them, and their nearness was a comfort to her as well. Something had to be done. The entire kingdom of Lochlannach was exhausted, frazzled, on the verge of self-destruction. If the beast wasn't caught and killed soon, fear would overtake the lands. Fear was a dangerous, unpredictable weapon. Princess Arity wasn't surprised when her father called a royal family meeting the following day. She wondered what extreme measures he had decided upon, and hoped the people of the kingdom would come to understand and support him. One thing Arity had learned from being the daughter of a king is that sometimes sacrifices had to be made for the greater good. They filed into High Hall, even Cousin Wyneth, who left her bed for the first time since Brecken's death. Arity was proud of her for coming. She forced herself not to pounce on her cousin with affection, instead holding Wyneth's hand tightly as the older women doted on her, smoothing her curls and flooding her with greetings. In order to show her hope for the kingdom, Arity wore a pale shade of periwinkle blue, her first colorful garment in days, while Wyneth still donned gray. The king and queen sat at the head of the long table in their tall oak chairs, lined with crushed blue velvet. As a child, Arity could remember running her fingers along the carved grooves of the chairs, where generations of kings and queens had sat before them. King Charles's younger sisters flanked the king and queen on either side with their husbands, the wave crests on one side, the bay creeks on the other. The king was the eldest child and only son. He'd always been close to his sisters and brothers-in-law, and welcomed their counsel. Princess Arity sat beside Wyneth, who still held her hand. Wyneth preserved her tough exterior, but Arity felt the truth in the slight tremble of her cousin's fingers. On Arity's other side was a fidgety Vixie. Across from them were two of Wyneth's three younger brothers, 14-year-old Bowen and Brixton at 12. Wyneth's youngest brother, Wyatt, ran about the expansive space of the hall with Donabin and their cousin Leo, while Kayleen and Merity sat with sketchbooks and fine chalks. The clearing of the king's throat was loud enough to draw everyone's attention. His face had taken on an ashen pallor, the skin drooping under his hazel eyes. It was alarming for Princess Arity to see her father in such a state. He set his elbows heavily on the table before him.
"Never in my reign have I experienced such desperation."
Arity's heart sank like an anchor to hear the truth in those words.
"I've spoken countless hours with my advisors and officers," he continued. "I've notified the other kingdoms of our predicament, and thankfully no other lands of Yrona suffer such a beast as ours. We've no idea where it came from, or if there are more than one, but it must be stopped. If it continues, or, cease forbid, multiplies."
A shiver seemed to ricochet through him.
"My men are not hunters. They are soldiers and sailors and watermen. I cannot allow my men to continue being slaughtered and terrified. If I don't act, the people will act on my behalf. They've already begun."
Revolt? Arity's innards shook at the idea of an uprising. Chaos. Lord James sat forward, stiffening.
"What do you mean, they've already begun?"
The king's lips pursed.
"In the North Village, where one of the murdered fishermen lived, the townspeople went door to door as a mob, looking for Lasht. They found a man with fresh markings."
"Cease alive, no," Lady Faith whispered.
Arity's stomach turned.
"The Lasht man was ill, could hardly walk. He told them he'd healed a baby bird that fell from a tree, but they were beyond sympathy, beyond reason. They stoned him to death."
The queen dragged in a sobbing breath and covered her mouth. Arity tasted bile as her own emotions rose.
"He should not have used his magic, aye, but I cannot have people taking the law into their own hands," the king said with a pained inflection. "I cannot allow senseless killings of innocents in my land." "Have you any ideas what we can do?" Lord Preston asked. "One."
Arity's father spoke the word in a near whisper. Then he looked straight at her, his eldest daughter. Goosebumps rippled in a cold wave across the princess's skin. Arity's mother grabbed the king's forearm in a hard grip and turned toward him, besieging him with a whisper.
"Charles, perhaps we should tell her without an audience."
Her father eyed her mother. His gaze held something Arity had never seen before. Something utterly unsettling. Something hardened.
You speak of me, Arity whispered.
Aye, her father whispered in return. Shall we leave?
Her uncle Preston began to stand.
No,
Arity said. They all turned to her, as if surprised by her strong tone.
Please stay. We've always been as one. Whatever he has to say to me can be said in front of all of you.
Truth be told, she was frightened and took comfort in being surrounded by family. She'd no clue what this meeting had to do with her, but they were all in this together. Everyone settled again, but not one of them appeared comfortable.
They call me the Liberal King,
her father continued in that same ominous, quiet tone.
The Romantic.
He looked at his wife, who gave an encouraging nod.
Because I believe in marrying for love, not lands or money or family name, the way it was for centuries before me. I promised my daughters they could choose their future husbands, just so long as the lads met our general approval.
Everyone around the table nodded. They all knew this and had agreed. The king had even fought his parents for his sisters to be able to marry of their own choosing. But Princess Arity could not nod along with them. A horrible sense of trepidation had taken root inside her. Why was he bringing up marriage? He wouldn't even allow young men to court her until she turned 18 next year.
But these are desperate times, he whispered.
Heavy sea snakes slithered in the pit of Arity's stomach.
What are you saying, Charles?
Lady Ashley asked. Again, her father looked directly at Arity.
I must ask something of you that I never wanted, I never expected. As your father, it pains me. As your king, it is necessary.
Her eyes burned, but she could only nod at his sincerity. Next to her, Cousin Wyneth's fingers flexed against Arity's, her first signs of life.
Arity.
Her father paused.
I must ask you to sacrifice the promise of love for the sake of our kingdom.
He stared at her hard. She tried to swallow, but she could only stare back, frozen.
I will be issuing a king's proclamation to all five kingdoms of Yrona to send their best hunters, but I must make their journeys worthwhile. I must ensure that the strongest will be willing to face this foe. A monetary prize is not enough, and as you all know, most of the kingdom's excess funds are wrapped up in my son's land and youngest daughter's dowry. Therefore, I have only one thing left to offer the man who kills this beast. I offer the hand of my oldest daughter in marriage.
No. Spirits of the seas, no. Princess Arity felt heavy, unable to move or take air into her lungs. On one side of her, Vixie made a high-pitched sound. On the other, Wyneth gasped. Her aunts and uncles gaped at him. The queen leaned forward to garner Arity's attention, that same desperation in her eyes that the king had, her voice thick.
Please, darling, don't think of it as sacrificing love. Who's to say you won't fall in love with him? I imagine he'll be brave and...
The queen had to stop and cover her mouth against the mounting emotions. Arity felt as if she might be sick. All around the table were the shocked faces of her family, but none of their horror matched the turmoil within her. She knew she should say something, but words. There were no words. Her life, as she knew it, was over. Her future and the freedom she'd imagined was dead. Vixie began swiping tears from her cheeks.
This isn't fair for Arity, Papa, she said.
Truly, Charles, said Lady Ashley, there must be another way.
The king's jaw said.
You don't think I've thought this through? You think I came to this decision on a careless whim, sister?
I think we could have discussed options as a family.
His voice rose.
I've spent countless hours speaking with every able-minded advisor in the kingdom. I've nothing left to give. Our lands had 2 years of drought and 2 years of rotting rain. Trades are down. All land in Lochlannach is owned by commoners or claimed for our royal lines. Would you have me break off pieces of your lands as reward?
The king pushed back in his chair. The queen placed a steadying hand on his forearm.
There's no need to raise your voice at her, Lord Preston said. I believe there bloody well is reason when I'm being accused of tossing my daughter away without a care.
He looked at Lady Ashley.
You, of all people, should want this beast killed.
Of course I want it killed, she shouted back at him. But this is unprecedented.
It cheapens the royal line, Lord Preston added.
How so? The Queen asked. Because hunters are mostly villagers.
She raised her eyebrows in challenge.
You know I have no prejudice against you or commoners, Lelaine, Lord Preston scoffed.
Charles, please, Lady Faith spoke. We know you're under pressure. We know you wouldn't make this decision without a care. It's just that we're all a bit surprised. You do realize a proclamation like this could invite any vagabond, brutish scoundrel to have a lucky shot at the beast and live out the rest of his life in the castle, don't you? And with your daughter, no less.
The Queen sucked in a breath.
Don't be crude. It's only the truth, Lady Faith said. We need to discuss the reality of this situation.
The reality is that we're facing a beast that we struggle to beat, the King snapped. I agree, Lord James said.
He sent his wife an apologetic look for opposing her.
I think this is a worthy sacrifice. Arranged marriages were the way for many years until our generation. Arity will survive.
As they argued, Arity imagined the kind, handsome face of Harrison, but the comfort he brought her was suddenly beyond reach.
Papa, please, Vixie pleaded. Use my dowry instead.
Oh, sweet Vixie. Arity's heart cracked. The Queen shook her head.
Vix, you will need that, trust me. I don't want it.
You're too young to understand the importance, love.
I'm old enough to know this is wrong.
Vixie was crying in earnest now. Lord James shook his head.
This generation of royal children doesn't understand the obligation we have to the people. These kids have lived indulgent lives with no responsibilities, playing and doing circus tricks all day.
Queen Lelaine glared. Exercise and agility is nothing to frown upon. Lady Faith waved a dismissive hand at her husband.
They learn of hardship through their studies. No need for them to actually experience it.
At this, Lord James rolled his eyes, and the arguing commenced. Vixie's wails became background noise to the entire family fighting, emotions rising along with their voices. Arity's queasy stomach continued to spin, making her dizzy. While the adults quarreled, Wyneth's worried eyes met Arity's. Am I selfish to want to refuse? Arity silently asked. Wyneth tightened her grip on her cousin's hand under the table, and Arity knew that even though Wyneth would do anything to avenge Brecken's death, she would not hold it against Arity if she defied her father in this. Lord James stood, his chair flying back, knocking over a glass of water as he pointed at Lord Preston. Others rose to their feet as well. Their voices echoed in Arity's ears, the words mashing together without meaning, making her head pound. 30 men had been slaughtered this week. 30 women were grieving for the men they loved, and one of those women was her cousin. 30 mothers had to live with images of their sons' strong bodies being ripped apart. Now her family was at odds. Could this proclamation end their suffering? She forced herself to sit straighter, grasping at fleeting strands of confidence.
Father.
The single word was lost amid a myriad of loud voices. Frustration and desperation painted her loved ones' faces. She yelled over them.
Father.
The room silenced. All heads turned to her.
I will do as I must.
Her words were strong, forceful, even though she felt nothing of the sort. She looked at her father's red face.
I do not fault you for making this difficult decision. Send out your proclamation. Let the hunt begin as soon as possible.
His eyes lit in pride and gratitude. When his chin trembled, the chin of a man who never backed down and never showed weakness, Princess Arity had to release herself from Wyneth's grip. The truth of everything began to soak into her like rain, each drop speaking to her. A stranger. A hunter. Your husband. Overwhelmed, she turned and gathered her skirts, forcing her chin to remain up as she walked steadily from High Hall. Chapter 6. Arity did not want to speak to a soul. She sat on the edge of her bed, numb. For the first time in her life, she felt an understanding of what it truly meant to be royal, a kinship with generations before her. When a soft knock sounded at her bedchamber door, she called, "Leave me be." The door opened a crack, and Arity saw a tangle of red curls around a tear-stained face. Vixie. All at once, her sister's offer to use her dowry and her cries on Arity's behalf was like a river of sentiment through her.
"Oh, Vixie, come here, love."
Her sister came straight to her bed and climbed up into her arms, clinging to her. Arity swallowed hard, trying to hold it together.
"I'm so mad at him, Eir."
Vixie pulled back, her pretty lips pursed.
"I refuse to call him Papa anymore."
This wounded Arity more than anything so far. She didn't want this kind of divide in the family. Arity rubbed Vixie's arm. She understood her sister's refusal to call him Papa. Tonight, she'd felt like a king's subject, not a king's daughter. But she had to get past that feeling.
"Hush now, Vix. I'm sure he's doing what he thinks is best."
The words felt vile on her tongue, though she remembered their discussion of honor and sacrifice. Those things had seemed simple in theory, when it hadn't been her own freedom on the line.
"You cannot seriously be all right with this."
Vixie pulled her arm away. Arity was torn between what her heart felt and what her mind knew. All her life she'd been taught to put the kingdom first. This was the first time she'd have to see that duty in action. Never did she imagine it would be like this.
"I will have to make difficult decisions when I am queen. You will never make decisions that hurt your children."
Arity's breaths were shaky. She hoped to the sea she'd never be faced with something like this when she had to rule. Could she ever sacrifice one of her children's happiness for the kingdom? If not, would that make her a weak ruler? She swallowed hard.
"Thank you for what you said in there, Vixie. You don't know what it means to me. I know you're trying to be strong and all that queenly nonsense, but I'm angry enough for both of us. I refuse to speak to him."
Arity choked back a laugh and took her passionate sister in her arms again.
"Please don't hold on to your anger too long."
Vixie sniffed and looked up.
"You really will do it, won't you? You'll marry a complete stranger."
Arity's stomach turned like a rough gale. She shut her eyes.
"I don't want to," she admitted. "But I will. I want this beast dead. I have to hope for the best, Vix."
When Arity opened her eyes, she found Vixie studying her.
"You will make a good queen someday,"
the girl said softly. This was the thing that finally brought Arity's emotions to the surface, causing her to fight for breath. She didn't feel like a future queen, and definitely not a future wife. She felt like a girl who had just lost something important.
"Will you stay with me tonight?"
"Aye, anything for you."
Chapter 7. Most males in Lochlannach focused on fishing, crabbing, and harvesting shellfish. Brothers Paxton and Tiern Seabold were two of the few who focused on land animals, hunting. The lands of Lochlannach were best for growing crops, not raising livestock, so meat such as poultry, pork, and beef were in low supply at any given time. Only the wealthiest merchants could afford to raise animals for personal consumption. In winter months when meat was scarce, the village turned to the Seabold brothers. They kept a lean-to in the nearby forest with freshly salted venison and sold it as cheaply as they could, barely making a profit, not wanting anyone to go hungry, even though they themselves were nearly always hungry. It didn't used to be that way. Before their father's knees went out 2 years ago, he'd been a successful deep-sea fisherman. They'd lived comfortably on an acre with a stream, eating fish as thick and meaty as beefsteaks. Now they were without a boat, crammed within one of the row houses of the village, lucky to salvage bits of leftover venison jerky. 17-year-old Tiern took their family's fall in stride, as good-natured as ever. But Paxton, 2 years his senior, had turned even angrier and more withdrawn than usual. Tiern suspected there was more to Paxton's issues, secrets that Tiern had been sheltered from, and reasons his older brother seemed to carry the weight of the world. But Pax was a private person, even among the ones he loved. The fall morning was crisp as Tien and Paxton made their way through the wooded brush with stealth, bows at the ready. For tall boys wading through fallen leaves, they scarcely made a sound. Paxton could go hours without talking, hours of listening to sounds of the forest, staring through leaves and branches for signs of movement. Tien could do it as well, but he didn't relish it the way Paxton seemed to. Inside, Tien was bored and restless. He wished a bloody deer would show itself already so they could skin it, drain it, hang it, and have their feet up in front of the fire before the curfew. He hated the cold evenings. Why couldn't it be summer year-round? They found a ridge of decaying logs and nestled themselves side by side, one brother facing each direction, and they waited. After a while, with no sign of anything but songbirds flying south, Tien glanced at Paxton from the corner of his eye. Pax was eyeing the forest in earnest. Paxton's brown hair was wild with waves, and almost long enough to tie back with a strip of leather. Tien didn't know how he could stand to have it in his face like that. His own hair was the same dark brown shade, but straight. He kept it pulled back neatly at the nape of his neck, more rugged, more muscular, more mysterious. That was Pax. Tien could make girls laugh and flattered them with compliments. They felt comfortable in his presence. Ironically, they flocked to Paxton for just the opposite reason. His abrasiveness seemed to be a challenge that kept girls on edge. Paxton never took the time to notice anything, but a single moment of eye contact with a girl could make her cheeks flush. No words necessary. Tien wanted to laugh at the backwardness, at how blushing lasses gravitated toward his older brother, who couldn't be asked to give them a lick of his attention. Tien saw movement and tore his gaze from his brother. His eyes met the trees just in time. A brown blur moved 20 yards away. All of Tien's fidgeting and boredom dissolved. For one shade of a second, he wondered if it might be the great beast, but he knew it never came out during daylight hours. No, the animal's form materialized into a gentle beast, nothing to fear. Never taking his eyes from the deer, he gently nudged Paxton before ever so slowly knocking his arrow to his bow and lifting it, aiming, waiting for the perfect shot. He could feel his brother's silent anticipation next to him. They were different in so many ways, but in these moments they were the same, joined by the thrill of the hunt. Tien's heart pumped hard, and the whoosh, whoosh, whoosh through his ears became a soothing mantra. This feeling, this rush made the boredom of waiting worthwhile. Just as the doe stepped into the clearing, making for a perfect shot, Paxton's fingers tightened on Tien's shoulder, and his eyes flicked to the side. Tien's heart sank. An older fawn, still sporting its fading spots, came bounding out beside its mother. "Bucking seas," Tien cursed. The brothers had a rule about not killing does while they were raising babes. Once the fawns were older, losing their spots, their mothers were fair game. Tien lowered his bow, disappointment washing through him. But seconds later, Paxton's fingers gripped him again. He followed his brother's gaze and was hit with elation at the sight before them. A giant buck with an 8-point rack stood between the trees, gazing toward the doe. A deer that size could feed half their village this week. "Take it," Paxton said, so low Tien almost couldn't hear. Technically, the buck was on Paxton's side, but he must have felt bad about the doe, so he was giving his little brother the go. Tien turned himself, achingly slow, and knocked his arrow to the bow once again, pulling it rigid. "Come on, big lad," he thought. "Give me a good shot." He didn't have to wait long. The unsuspecting buck, focused solely on the doe, stepped out. Tien didn't hesitate. He let his arrow fly and it found its mark beneath the ribs. He released a huge breath of relief as the beautiful animal faltered and fell. The doe and fawn dashed away. Paxton leapt to his feet and ran to their prey. Tien always let him take care of this part. His brother unsheathed a dagger from his waist and squatted at the animal's side. "There now," Paxton soothed. He reached out slowly, with care, and pressed a hand to the buck's head. The animal was still alive, breathing hard. "Go be at peace. Your life will not be wasted." Those words, spoken at every kill, never ceased to bring a chill of awe to Tien. He He watched as his brother raised the dagger and ended the creature's suffering. If only the lasses in town could see Paxton here in his element, see how capable their handsome brute was of gentleness, even as he killed. They'd likely be elbowing one another out of the way and racing to see who could lift their skirts for him the quickest. Aside from their father, Tien was the only person who knew this side of Paxton. He felt honored, as if witnessing something private and intimate. When Paxton was ready, they got to work. It was stew for dinner that night. Maren Seabolt cooked a small portion of the fresh venison in a pot with potatoes, carrots, and the last of the thick-skinned tomatoes from their summer garden. She hummed a folk song as she bustled about. When everything was ready, she made heaping bowls for her two boys and brought their suppers to them in front of the fire. They ate like kings on the night of a big kill. If only it happened more often.
"Thank you, Mum," Tien said.
"No, thank you, laddie."
She kissed his forehead.
"Thanks," Paxton said.
Their mother rumpled his mess of hair before turning away, humming again. The front door swung open with a rickety creak, and their father lumbered in, his cane clanking against hard dirt floors. His body looked as pained and burdensome as always, but his eyes shone. He sniffed the air.
"I heard you got a big one, eh?"
"Aye, father,"
Paxton said, his voice deep with pride.
"Tien took it."
The corner of Tien's mouth quirked up and his cheek shaded. Their father rumbled a laugh and gave his youngest boy a punch on his lean shoulder before falling into his chair with an oof. Their mother was at his side the next moment, holding a steaming bowl.
"Grab a bowl and join us, Maren," he told her.
"There's news. Big news."
Her hand flew to her heart.
"Not another killing."
"Nay, nay. But it does have to do with the great beast. Our king has issued a proclamation."
Her eyebrows rose, and the boys traded looks of interest.
"We didn't hear about any proclamation when we were in the market," Tien said. "It was just issued. Hurry yourself."
Mr. Seabolt gave his wife a smack on the bottom. She rushed off with an uncharacteristic giggle, and Paxton shook his head at his grinning brother, turning his attention back to the stew.
"So the king finally believes there's a beast and plans to do something about it?" Paxton asked. "Now that his own men have been killed, and not just peasants."
"It would seem so,"
his father said with a frown. Paxton grumbled. Tien and his father ignored Paxton's jibe and tone. They were accustomed to his negativity toward the king, and toward everything in general. When the four of them were gathered around the fire, Mr. Seabolt set down his empty bowl and placed his large palms on his knees. All attention turned to him.
"The king's proclamation states that the best hunters from all of Eorona are invited to Lochlannach for a massive hunt. Whoever kills the great beast will get the most valuable reward the king can offer."
He paused, and the room was thick with expectancy.
"The hand of Princess Erity."
Mrs. Seabolt gasped, nearly toppling her bowl.
"No, shite," Tien breathed.
His mother must have been in shock because she didn't even swat him for his language.
"Aye,"
their father said. Tien and Paxton stared at each other, their eyes distant as their minds swirled with possibility. Killing the great beast would turn a regular man, a mere hunter, a commoner, into royalty. He would marry a princess, thereby earning himself the most gorgeous of waterway lands with abundant crops, enclosed within the safety of the legendary stone wall. Their family would be comfortable for generations, beyond comfortable.
"Get it out of your minds. It's too dangerous,"
Mrs. Seabolt whispered, panicked.
"Even soldiers cannot kill it."
"The boys are smart," their father said. "The king's soldiers have become lazy due to our blessed lack of war, and they train primarily for sea battles and defensive attacks, not tracking. Our boys know the forests. They have common sense and a world of skill. I think they should both enter. Someone has to kill this beast. It may as well be them. They'd be heroes. And think of the prize."
Mrs. Seabolt pursed her lips at him.
"I'd be out hunting the beast anyhow if it weren't for the bloody curfew threatening to arrest everyone,"
Paxton said. His mother propped a hand on her hip.
"Ah, I don't think so, young man.
But they all knew she wouldn't have been able to stop him. Tien and his brother became lost in visions of the ultimate hunt. Their mother absently fiddled with her apron, twisting it and then smoothing it, a nervous habit.
This is absurd. I think...
Their father's eyebrows drew together.
What, dear?
It's just that...
Her eyes slid to Tien with worry, and he sat up straighter.
He can rival any hunter, mother, Paxton told her.
Aye, but he's young still.
She swallowed and shook her head. Tien ground his teeth. When would she stop viewing him as a wee lad? He knew how children were valued in their society, but he hated to be coddled and sheltered. He shot her a pleading expression.
I'm 17, mother, not a child.
Her eyes scanned his lean frame as if he were still 5.
I know, dear.
She barely got the words out before tears were escaping.
But this beast...
No, no.
Mr. Seabolt sighed and reached for his wife's hand.
Fear not. The boys will look out for each other.
You're not frightened at all,
she asked louder now.
I don't care about the riches. I care about my boys. You can stop them. Forbid them.
Both sons turned to their father. Indeed, Tien could see there was reluctance, and something darker in the man's face. Maybe fear. But he knew their father could see the hunt for what it was, an honor and the opportunity of a lifetime.
The boys do not have to go, Maren, but if they choose to participate, I will not stop them. Mother.
Paxton's voice was firm, his eyes like strong mahogany as he held her gaze.
I vow not to let harm come to Tien. One of us will kill this beast, and we will both return home safely. We will make you proud. Please, let us go with your blessing.
He spoke with absolute conviction, and Tien wondered if he'd ever be able to talk like that and be taken as seriously as his older brother. Their mother covered her mouth and squeezed her eyes shut. After a long pause, she finally nodded, letting out a whimper. Their father patted her knee, beaming at his boys. Tien and Paxton met gazes, the older brother giving him a nod, solidifying their partnership in this adventure. Tien's chest swelled with pride and excitement. The ultimate hunt. The hand of a princess. What could be better? Chapter 8 Princess Arity held her skirts in her fists as she ran down the stone hall of the royal quarters and burst into Lady Wyneth's bedroom. She knew she could not face what was happening in the royal streets of Castle Lochlannoch without her cousin. Lads, men, over 100 of them, all potential husbands. Arity found her sitting in a chair in another grey gown, staring at the wall. Wyneth was fully dressed and her hair had been brushed.
Wyn?
Her cousin startled at the sound of her name. It broke Arity's heart all over again to see the vibrant girl so washed out. Arity slid into a crouch beside her.
How do you feel?
Arity asked. Wyneth gave a weak shrug, and Arity suddenly felt bad for bothering her. The princess dropped her eyes, fidgeting with nerves. Wyneth sat up straighter.
They're not here already, are they? The proclamation just went out. It's been over a week,
she swallowed.
A week already?
Wyneth's eyes cleared as they looked at each other.
Oh, heir, are there many?
Arity tried to stay calm, but all the fear and nervousness tangled together to make her voice shaky and high.
There are hundreds of them. Where are they? Can we spy?
These words from Wyneth filled Arity with relief. They'd always faced things together, practically joined at the hip.
Aye, cousin, I don't think I can do this without you.
Wyneth stood and took both Arity's hands in hers.
We go together.
A grateful smile graced Arity's lips, the first real one since she'd agreed to this madness.
Well, let's go scout the lads then, Wyneth said.
Her grip on Arity's hand tightened.
Don't be afraid. I'm certain one of them will be perfect for you.
Arity's chest tightened. She wasn't certain of that at all, but she appreciated the sureness in her cousin's voice.
I'm sure they'll all be in love with you before the hunt ends.
Gwyneth said with false cheeriness. Arity let out a breathy laugh, but her stomach turned at the thought of how many deaths could be wrought through this hunt. Hand in hand, they headed toward the south-covered parapet walk along the edge of the castle that overlooked the royal market. They sneaked quietly out the doors. Gwyneth's hand shielded her eyes, and she let out a small sound of discomfort as they exited the arched doorway into the fresh air. With a pang, Arity realized this was Gwyneth's first time outdoors since Brecken had died. She hooked her arm through Gwyneth's and pulled her close.
Thank you for doing this, Wyn.
Always, her cousin whispered. As they neared the edge and peered through one of the tall embrasures, Gwyneth exclaimed, Great seas! The streets were crammed, and the atmosphere was exuberant. People were smiling for the first time in months. Men of differing statures, ages, and appearances were milling about, sharpening blades and tightening bowstrings. And it seemed that everyone from Lochlannoch had come to see. Arity's heart punched the inside of her chest as her eyes raked the people. Somewhere in that huge crowd was the hope of their kingdom, and her future mate. She noticed beards and smooth faces, dark skin and light, local clothing among styles of fur and bright colors from distant lands, voices rising in foreign languages. Some of the men looked like brutes with oversized muscles and grimy outfits. Arity closed her eyes and tried to breathe. The idea of giving herself to some surly stranger made her ill with fright. Brave men, Gwyneth kept her voice quiet. She hadn't let go of Arity's arm. When the princess looked at her, she saw eyes haunted by memories. Gwyneth would know firsthand what those brave men would be facing. She hadn't spoken of the beast to Arity, but it clearly tormented her thoughts. Indeed, Arity said. They leaned on the stone opening for several minutes, before one of the townswomen caught sight of them from a booth of scarves. Arity heard the joyous sound of murmurs from below, whispers of, Look, it's Princess Arity and Lady Gwyneth. Both girls stopped as hundreds of eyes turned up to them. They were accustomed to this, but today it felt different. Today, many of the eyes in the crowd were gazing up at their possible future prize. Swallowing hard and forcing a smile, Arity raised her hand and waved. Townspeople waved back with excitement, but the strange men only stared, some grinning, some nudging each other. When a respectable amount of time had passed, Arity gently pulled her cousin from the ledge, out of sight. She leaned against the wall and closed her eyes, feeling Gwyneth's hands on her shoulders. Are you all right, Arity? The princess was shaking, but she nodded. I'll be fine. You're a blessing to this kingdom, you know. Gwyneth pulled her into a hug, their heads resting perfectly on each other's shoulders. I would have likely fought the king's decision. I admire your dedication. Gwyneth had always been strong and lively. It felt good to see a glimpse of that returning, and to be able to lean on her cousin once again. Oh, look! Gwyneth peered down over Arity's shoulder. Is that Mrs. Rathbrook? Arity turned to see the woman at one of the market tables that sold herbal leaves and powders. Officer Vest stood nearby, scanning the people. Arity was just about to remark how it was nice to see Mrs. Rathbrook out, when she noticed the space around the woman. The market was crowded, but nobody was near her. In fact, people were casting her furtive, even aghast, glances, ushering their children away. Each time Mrs. Rathbrook moved a step, the crowd shifted. By the seas. Arity scowled as she strained to watch from the distance. Look at that. Mrs. Rathbrook slid her payment on the table, and the unsmiling clerk tossed copper coins in front of her, yanking her hand back. The lashed woman seemed not to notice, saying something with a kind smile and retreating with her bag. Mrs. Rathbrook walked stoically through the people, who stared as they cleared a path for her, crushing together to keep out of arm's reach. Awful, Gwyneth whispered. Arity's jaw was set in anger. Even the guards and military personnel gave Mrs. Rathbrook a wide berth as she made her way through the booths. No wonder the woman kept to her own chambers most of the time. Pardon me, princess and lady. Arity pulled back at the sound of one of the king's errand boys standing in the arched doorway. Princess Arity, his majesty would like a word. Of course, thank you. He rushed off, and Arity took Gwyneth's hand again, not wanting to be alone.
She made her poor cousin accompany her to her father's study, where he spoke in hushed tones to one of his military advisers.
Ah, Erity,
he said when he caught sight of her. He rose from his grand chair and came around, nodding at Wyneth.
It's good to see you about again, Lady Wynne.
Wyneth gave a small curtsy.
It's good to be about, Your Majesty.
His advisor shut the door, and the four of them remained standing. Her father still showed signs of exhaustion, but his eyes gleamed with the same hope of the townspeople in the market.
I hate to ask more of you, Erity.
She braced herself.
What do you need, Father?
He cleared his throat.
As you've surely gathered, hunters have begun arriving. We fear once the hunt begins, there will be many who want to flee after they see.
His voice trailed off as his sight shifted to his niece, who dropped her eyes.
We would like to keep up their morale as best as possible. We'll be gathering the hunters in the West Commons area, so they may practice their skills and have a place to rest in peace after the hunt each day.
He paused, hesitating. Erity thought he could probably face down other kings with more confidence than he had facing down his own daughter. He continued.
It might be difficult or uncomfortable, but I was hoping you'd be willing to visit the West Commons area daily. You would, of course, have guards, and you're never to be alone with any of the men. Our hope is that seeing you will lift the spirits of the hunters.
And remind them of their prize. She tried to breathe steadily, feeling embarrassed and used, reminding herself this was all for the best. She was one life among tens of thousands. Still, no matter how she reasoned with herself, her gut still churned. She wasn't accustomed to speaking to males outside of their family and the Gilfins. Her nerves bunched into tight bundles, making Erity lightheaded, but she managed to nod.
Of course, Father.
She knew this was not easy for him. He sounded just as afraid as she was about what kind of man she'd end up with, what kind of man they'd be welcoming into the royal family. But regardless of who he was or where he hailed from, if he killed the beast, they would owe him respect and gratitude.
I've got servants setting up tents and tables and shooting ranges in the West Commons area now. If you could make an appearance during the dinner hour, I'd be appreciative.
I'll be there.
Good.
The king's advisor bustled to the desk, turning the king's attention back to work. Erity swallowed her emotions and the girl slipped from the room. Wyneth shot one questioning look at Erity, as if to gauge her thoughts.
I'm okay,
Erity said, letting out a long breath.
Not every girl is lucky enough to have hundreds of suitors, I.
Wyneth huffed a mild laugh through her nose. Then she got quiet and looked at the princess.
You don't have to act brave on my account, you know.
Erity swallowed.
I know.
She had to stay brave for her own self. They stopped when they reached her bedroom door.
You'll come with me tonight to the West Commons, won't you, cousin?
Wyneth ran her fingers down a strand of Erity's long hair, smoothing it.
I won't leave you, I promise.
Erity smiled. She could do this. With Wyneth at her side, she could resist the urge to escape her fate, to flee somewhere far away where her life and choices were her own. She'd agreed to this, and the wheels were set in motion. Running from her responsibility wasn't an option. She would have to make the best of it. Chapter 9. Mrs. Rathbrook was glad to feel the sunlight on her skin for the first time in months. She needed to restock a few herbs in her cabinets. It was a fine day to be in the markets. Busy, festive. Hunters of all nationalities filled the royal plaza, taking some of the attention off her. But not all. She could still sense the stares, though she no longer let it bother her. Years of stares had toughened her. Officer Vest remained close behind, a constant refuge. Mrs. Rathbrook couldn't help but glance around at the nearby men in their strange furs and head wraps, wondering which one of them might kill the beast and marry the princess. A shock of heartache filled her on Princess Erity's behalf. The king's decision seemed hypocritical to her, seeing as how he refused his late parents' wish for him to marry a princess of Teresta, though she would never voice her opinion aloud. As she browsed the selection of fresh, dried, and powdered herbs, someone sidled close to her side, much closer than usual.
Mrs. Rathbrook caught a flash of orange fabric from the corner of her eye.
Good day, Royal Lushed One.
The smooth, husky female voice was not Lachlan. Mrs. Rathbrook turned her head up to the stranger and sucked in a breath at the sight of her, shining black hair against light brown skin, eyes of crystal blue, a brown cloak over a silken orange dress. The woman gave her a smile, but something about it felt off, disingenuous.
Hello,
Mrs. Rathbrook said. The woman glanced down at Mrs. Rathbrook's hands, which held a satchel of coins.
Your hands are very beautiful.
Mrs. Rathbrook's heart sped up. Nobody spoke openly of her lashes, or her ability in general. She withdrew her hands, hiding them within her pockets. The woman gave her that ominous smile again. Officer Vest stepped closer, but the woman ignored him. She only had eyes for the Royal Lashed One, and she obviously had something to say. Mrs. Rathbrook could not help her curiosity. She kept her eyes on the woman as she gave a nod and said, It's all right, Officer Vest. He stepped back, giving them space.
Your own guard, the woman drawled. How charming.
Mrs. Rathbrook narrowed her eyes.
Who are you? My name is Rosaria. I hail from the hotlands of Kalor.
The name meant nothing to Mrs. Rathbrook. This woman must have accompanied the Kalorian hunters. How does it feel to be a slave to the Lochsons? The pleasant look never left the woman's face, even as she spoke abrasive words. Mrs. Rathbrook went still. She'd never been to Kalor. Perhaps open rudeness was acceptable there, but she did not appreciate it. She lowered her voice and responded curtly.
King Charles and his family treat me very well, thank you.
She turned back to the herbs, hoping the woman would take the hint and leave her be. No such luck.
A comfortable room in a lavish castle, while others of your kind suffer throughout the land.
Mrs. Rathbrook stood tall and faced the woman again. Her words had cut deep. She often thought about her own comfort compared to the despair of other lashed, but she felt powerless to do anything about it.
What would you have me do, miss?
Then she remembered that Rokato, the root of prejudice against lashed, had been from Kalor.
Perhaps if the lashed in your land had not pursued their greed and hatred, these issues would not be upon us.
The woman's eyes hardened with anger. Officer Vest stepped forward.
I am going to have to ask you to move along, miss.
The woman, Rosaria, ignored him.
You know nothing, she hissed at Mrs. Rathbrook. But you will soon learn. And just what is that supposed to mean?
The woman's sneer transformed her beautiful face into something frightening. Then she briskly turned and walked from the stand, keeping her hands deep in her cloak pockets, disappearing into the multitude of bodies. Mrs. Rathbrook noticed people quickly turning their heads away when they saw her looking.
Are you all right, Mrs. Rathbrook?
Officer Vest asked. The crinkles around his eyes were further deepened with worry.
Did she threaten you?
Mrs. Rathbrook shook her head. She wasn't quite sure what had just happened, but it had left her weary.
I think I've got all I need for now.
She kept her head down as Officer Vest walked her back to the castle, her heart burdened with the woman's words. Chapter 10 Paxton could immediately tell the true hunters from the ones motivated only by the king's promised reward. He couldn't help glaring at the gentlemen with their pretty bows and pristine arrows as they took their time aiming at the wooden targets. No doubt they'd never had to raise a bow for protection or a meal. He'd be happy when the hunt began and the impostors cleared out, wetting their fancy trousers in fright. Aye, being on royal lands put him in a fine mood. The West Commons area was surrounded by a stone wall, a miniature version of the wall protecting the royal lands. The area's single entry had two iron gates that swung inward, covered in vines. At the far side were long tables for eating. Against the wall by the tables were sets of stone and wood steps, likely used for spectator seating at events. The middle area of the commons consisted of fine grass where the men gathered for target practice and exercise. Tents had been erected at the southern end. Next to Paxton, Tien shifted from foot to foot, unable to stay still.
When do you think these idiots will finish? They've been at the targets forever.
Paxton peered at the current archer and grimaced as his arrow missed the target completely, wobbling to the side and clanking into the wall. The archer frowned at his bow and grumbled, as if the bow were the problem. The man next to him commented about the gust